Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the past few decades, we have been bombarded with images and stories of atrocity and brutality perpetrated by the likes of the ruling mullahs in Iran, the Taliban, ISIS, and Boko Haram. In fact, many of us here today in this forum have been victims of their atrocity, of their crimes. I am often asked, is there something inherent in the religion of Islam which promotes such behavior? Does Islam's sacred scripture breed violence and intolerance? My typical simple answer is, you can pretty much find anything your heart desires in any book that you read, be it the Bible, the Communist Manifesto, or the Holy Quran. It all depends on what you are looking for. I think Rumi has said it the best. Rumi likens the Quran to a rope. He says, "Zan rasan qomi darun chah shudan." Many have fallen into the well by clinging to that rope. But then Rumi immediately qualifies, "Marrasan ra nist jurmi ay anud chun tura soudaye sarbala nabud." There is no fault in the rope, O perverse man, because you had no desire for reaching the top of the well. In other words, you can use a rope like the Quran to descend into a well, as well as clinging to the rope and getting out of the well. And that's the truth. As soon as the Prophet Muhammad died, some of his successors embarked on aggressive wars. They invaded other lands. They conquered other lands in the name of spreading Islam. They wanted to create an Islamic empire. And empire building, by its very nature, requires force, violence, and repression. But some other followers of the Prophet took an entirely different path. A path that ultimately led, for example, to the creation of Islamic Sufism. And Sufism gave the world some of the most precious jewels of human spirituality, such as Rumi. It is amazing how identical religious beliefs and practices inspired diametrically opposed courses of action in early Islam. And those opposing courses of actions has persisted until today. And by the way, Islam is not alone in this respect. The same applies to all religions of the world: Judaism, Christianity, Hinduism, so on and so forth. In the next couple of sermons, inshallah, I will introduce to you a vision of Islam that centers on peace. I will base my talk entirely on our sacred scripture, the Quran. As we shall see, peace is front and center in the Quran. The mission of the Prophet Muhammad was to promote peace. And today is the first installment of my talk. So let's begin. I believe that the name of a religion gives a clue to its character and identity. For example, Judaism. Judaism is derived from Judah, which was a kingdom in Judea in today's Israel. Jews are descendants of Judah. The entire religion of Judaism revolves around the history and destiny of the Jewish tribe. Christianity gets its name from Jesus Christ. The entire religion of Christianity revolves around the life and destiny of Jesus. How about Islam? Well, the word Islam is derived from two possible Arabic roots. The first one could be Selm, which is translated into English as peace. The other possible root for the word Islam is Salama, which means submission or surrender. As we shall see later, both peace and surrender come together to form the foundation of the religion of Islam. Let me repeat one more time. Both peace and surrender to God come together to form the cornerstone, the foundation of the religion of Islam. The Prophet Muhammad's mission started when he received the first revelation from God. Luckily for us, chapter 97 in the Quran, which is a short chapter, tells us what happened to the Prophet in that fateful night when the angel of God, Jibreel, descended from the heavens unto the Prophet. The Quran calls this divine encounter, this divine episode, Laylatul Qadr, the night of power. Let's hear what the Quran says. Inna anzalnahu fi laylatil qadr. Wa ma adraka ma laylatul qadr. Laylatul qadr khayrun min alf shahr. Tanazzalul malaikatu war ruhu fiha bi izn rabbihim min kulli amr. Behold, we revealed it on the night of power. What will make you understand the night of power? The night of power is better than 1,000 nights. The angels and the spirit descend then with the permission of their Lord in every affair. And now comes the climax of the chapter, which is so crucial for the future of Islam. And this last verse is actually very critical for the rest of my sermon. Salamun hiya hatta matla'il fajr. And peace it is until the breaking of the dawn. Salamun hiya hatta matla'il fajr. And peace it is until the breaking of the dawn. So the night of power for the Prophet in his first encounter with the angel of God was a peace-inducing event. I cannot overemphasize what I just said. The first encounter of the Prophet Muhammad with the angel of God, who had descended from the heavens, was a peace-inducing event. And I'm choosing my words extremely carefully here. Revelation induced peace in the Prophet Muhammad. In the Abrahamic tradition, angels are a mysterious presence. A mysterious presence sent by God into the natural world for what purpose? To promote well-being and harmony. Angels in Abrahamic tradition are bearers of spiritual tranquility. They are bearers of serenity. The last verse that I just read to you, Salamun hiya hatta matla'il fajr, echoes this very point, and peace it is until the breaking of the dawn. So the angels brought peace with them to the Prophet Muhammad, and this carries a huge symbolism. The Prophet's first experience of revelation was filled with peace. So what happened in the first episode of Revelation, peace, is a part that stands for the whole of Revelation. If this night is peace, then so is Revelation. That is the Quran itself. The Quran is a book most concerned with peace. I know this may sound awkward to those whose introduction to Islam has been through the mullahs or the Taliban. For them, it's probably impossible to comprehend that the Quran is actually focused. It's centered on the whole idea of peace. And that's what I'm trying to piece together for you today through the verses of the Holy Quran. The Quran's earliest visions of peace are personal and heavenly. The earliest visions of peace in the Quran are personal and heavenly. It is personal in the sense that it focuses on the inner peace for the individual believer. It is also heavenly in the sense that it associates heaven, the ultimate reward for a righteous life, with peace. As it will become clear to you shortly, the Quran associates heaven, paradise, with peace. The highest reward a righteous person can possibly attain. What I just shared with you, that the earliest visions of peace in the Quran are personal and heavenly, is so critical, so consequential for the development of Islamic mysticism. Let me say a word about the literary style of the Quran. The Quran always describes the supernatural phenomenon such as God, angels, hell, heaven in the shades of the natural world. The Quran uses vivid, energetic language to bring the supernatural phenomenon it describes to life before the eyes of the audience. It tries to make the audience, the reader, feel as though they are witnesses to that event, to that phenomenon. The Quran even whips up the readers emotionally. It whips up their emotion by appealing to their imagination. This is the style of the Quran, and we need to understand this style of the Quran before we attempt to understand the meaning of the verses of the Quran, particularly those that deal with the supernatural phenomenon. Now, when it comes to paradise, the Quran draws on the imagery of royal courts and their lush estates. Paradise, according to the Quran, is a beautiful garden filled with greenery and flowing water, plentiful food and drink, rivers of milk, wine that has no aftertaste, wine that does not intoxicate you, houris, virgin companions that have large, beautiful eyes. So paradise, according to the Quran, is a place of eternal luxury, a place of eternal delights and pleasure. Or simply put, paradise or Jannah is the garden of bliss. Paradise is the garden of bliss. Now the question is, where does the bliss actually originate from? Where does the bliss come from? The Quran names paradise Dar es Salaam, the abode of peace. Do you want to know where that bliss comes from? It comes from peace. Paradise is Dar es Salaam, the abode of peace. The name says it all. Paradise is filled with salam, with peace. And that's what precisely God summons all Muslims to, peace. Chapter 10, verse 25. Allahu yad'u ila dar as-salam. God summons all to the abode of peace. This is very telling. This is very telling. The highest reward for a righteous person is paradise. And paradise is essentially peace. At its core, paradise is all about peace. That's why the Quran calls paradise Dar es Salaam. This clearly shows that concord and peace is central to Quran's plan for human life. This idea, concord and peace, will dominate the mission of the Prophet Muhammad as it unfolds over a 23-year period in war-torn Arabia. What happened in the early days of revelation in Mecca stuck to Prophet Muhammad over the rest of his mission. Now, if paradise is Dar es Salaam, the abode of peace, can warmongers be admitted to it? Can hateful people be admitted to paradise? I don't think so. I honestly don't think so. What makes paradise paradise is actually the very character of its inhabitants. It is the inhabitants that make paradise paradise. Inhabitants of paradise have nothing but peace in their hearts and soul. I just quoted you a verse from the Holy Quran, chapter 15, verse 47. Udkhuluha bisalamin aminin wa naza'na ma fi sudurihim min qillin ikhwanan ala sururin mutaqabilin. When the righteous enter paradise, they will be told, enter in peace and safety, and we shall remove all hatred, all ill wishes from their hearts. They will be like brothers sitting on couches face to face. Isn't that incredible? This the way the Quran describes paradise. In other words, any lingering rancor, any lingering grudges in their hearts for each other will be removed. And then they will all become siblings. This is the story of the inhabitants of paradise. Brothers and sisters, you and I, we should always keep this in mind. Are we worthy of paradise? Does our character, our identity, our thoughts, emotion, behavior, do they make us worthy of entering paradise? These verses of the Quran are so critical to our understanding what is front and center in the vision of the Quran for a Muslim life. So, inhabitants of paradise are the very expression of peace and safety. Inhabitants of paradise are safe from each other's actions and tongues. That's what the Quran teaches. Chapter 56, verses 25 and 26. لا يسمعون فيها لغوا ولا تأثيما إلا قيلا سلاما سلاما. In paradise, they will hear no abusive speech, nor any talk of sin, only the saying, Salaman Salama, peace, peace. As you can see, peace is so paramount for righteousness that when the righteous die, the very first word they hear from the angels is Salam, peace. That's the first word they hear from angels when they die. Chapter 16, verse 32. الَّذِينَ تَتَوَفَّاهُمُ الْمَلَائِكَةُ طَيِّبِينَ يَقُولُونَ سَلَامٌ عَلَيْكُمْ أُدْخُلُ الْجَنَّةَ بِمَا كُنْتُمْ تَعْمَلُونَ. Those whose lives the angels take in a state of goodness and purity, the angels tell them, peace be upon you. Enter paradise by virtue of your deeds. And when the righteous enter paradise, something absolutely astonishing happened. God Himself, the Creator of heavens and the earth, will greet them with salam, peace. Chapter 36, verse 58. Salamun qawlan min Rabbin Rahim. Peace is a word from the Lord of Mercy. Salam of God is not the usual greeting. It is the downpouring of peace into the hearts of the righteous. The righteous, according to the Quran, will be given a pure drink. A pure drink which would cleanse their hearts from all hatred, all animosity and ill will. Chapter 76, verse 21. وَسَقَاهُمْ رَبُّهُمْ شَرَابًا تَهُورًا. Their Lord will give them a pure drink. Inhabitants of paradise will greet each other with divine salam. Chapter 14, verse 23. تَحِيَّتُهُمْ فِيهَا سَلَامٌ. In paradise, their greeting is peace. Now perhaps we can better appreciate the true meaning of salam when Muslims meet and greet each other. What do Muslims say to each other? Salamun alaykum. Peace be upon you. The Muslim salam is not the equivalent of hi or hello in English language or durood in Farsi. It's not that. Salam is meant to be a genuine offer of paradise, a genuine offer of peace. So rather than suspicion or hostility, Muslims should greet each other with an offer of peace. This is the mindset that Islam wants to cultivate in its followers. Just imagine for a sec, what sort of world we would create for ourselves if we had such a mindset, such an intention, the intention of peace, every time we interacted with each other. Now let's go back to the point that I raised earlier in my sermon. Islam is both peace and surrender to God. Remember that? When I talked about the possible root words for Islam, and I mentioned that it could possibly be from the root word salam, which means peace, or salama, which means surrender to God. Now let's see what the connection between peace and surrender to God could be. Well, in the Quran, as it turns out, peace originates from God. This is so critical, so huge for the development of Islamic Sufism. In the Quran, let me repeat one more time, in the Quran, peace originates from God. In fact, one of God's beautiful names is As-Salam, peace. So, get used to the idea of God at peace. And here is the reference in the Holy Quran, chapter 59, verse 23. هو الله الذي لا إله إلا هو الملك القدوس السلام المؤمن المهيمن العزيز الجبار المتكبر. He is God, other than whom there is no God, the King, the Holy, the Peace, the Defender, the Guardian, the Mighty, the Omnipotent, the Supreme. Quite a few attributes and beautiful names of God are packed in this short verse. But note that in this verse, God as peace is associated with other attributes that all amount to providing order and protection by unchallengeable power. So, God as peace is associated with other attributes of God that amount to providing order and protection. This wisdom is very critical for my next sermon, inshallah, which will deal with social peace. Now, God as peace means that first and foremost, God's presence will instill peace in the hearts of the righteous believer. The Quran uses the Arabic word sakinah for this sort of divine peace, sakinah. Let me give you, since we don't have that much time, let me give you just one example of the usage of sakinah, divine peace, in the Holy Quran. As you all know, the Meccan idol worshippers wanted to assassinate the Prophet Muhammad. So the Prophet fled to the neighboring city, Medina, with his companion, Abu Bakr. The hostile Meccans gave chase. At one point, the Prophet and Abu Bakr had to hide in a cave. I guess we can only imagine how tense, how anxious they must have felt in that cave, with the Meccans in pursuit. That's when God sent down his Sakinah to their hearts. Chapter 9, verse 40 gives us a glimpse of that moment. إِذْ يَقُولُ لِصَاحِبِهِ لَا تَحْزَنْ إِنَّ اللَّهَ مَعَنَا فَأَنْزَلَ اللَّهُ سَكِينَتَهُ عَلَيْهِ. The Prophet said to Abu Bakr, "Grieve not, truly God is with us." Then God sent down his Sakinah upon him. What is Sakinah? What is Sakinah? And by the way, the word Sakinah in all likelihood comes from Hebrew. Okay, that's a different story. But what I'm going to just share with you about Sakinah, it's identical to its usage in the Old Testament and also the New Testament. So Sakinah indicates God's presence in the world and the calm that God's presence bestows on the soul. Sakinah is an overwhelming, overflowing sense of peace and tranquility. That peace, Sakinah, is rooted in the calming presence of God. Not unlike what a newborn baby feels in the presence of his mother. Sakinah is a unique form of peace. A unique form of peace that only God's presence can provide. You and I can live in the most peaceful city in the world. We can live among the most civil people, and yet we may be filled with anxiety, uneasiness, fear, even dread. But if you have Sakinah in your heart, no hardship, no calamity can rob you of your peace. Why? Because this peace that you feel in your heart originates from God's presence. And God is always present. This is the life the Quran envisions for a believer. No wonder the Quran makes such a bold claim in chapter 13 of the Holy Quran. I'm sure all of you have heard this beautiful verse. Now put it in the context of Sakinah and the overall vision of the Quran for peace. Chapter 13, verse 28. الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا وَتَطْمَئِنُّ قُلُوبُهُمْ بِذِكْرِ اللَّهِ أَلَا بِذِكْرِ اللَّهِ تَطْمَئِنُّ الْقُلُوبُ. Those who have faith and their hearts are at peace in the remembrance of God. Truly, it is in the remembrance of God that hearts find peace. Ah, how beautifully Rumi understood the deep meaning of this beautiful verse in the Quran. گر گریزی بر امید راحتی زان طرف هم پیشت آید آفتی. هیچ کنجی بیدد و بیدام نیست، جز به خلوتگاه حق آرام نیست. If you flee in the hope of some relief, on that side also a calamity comes to meet you. No corner is without wild beasts there is no peace except in a place where you are alone with God. So Sakina is only attainable through surrender to God, making peace with God. As Rumi said so eloquently, صلح کن با این پدر آقی بهل تا که فرش زر نماید آب و گل. Make peace with this father, with God. Abandon disobedience, then water and clay, the whole world, may appear to you as a carpet of gold. Making peace with God, what does it mean? What is the sensible meaning of making peace with God? It means harmonizing with God's design, harmonizing with God's wisdom and plan, harmonizing with the world around us, not expecting that the world should revolve around me, my wishes, my priorities. A self-centered person may become the richest man on this planet. A self-centered person may become the most powerful person in the world, yet he will never have inner peace. When Rumi says, make peace with God so that this world that others perceive as hell would appear to you as paradise, it is not an exaggeration. This is not an exaggeration. That's Rumi's personal experience. Rumi had gotten a taste of paradise on earth. How? By making peace with God. That's what Rumi shares with us about his personal experience in his masterpiece, Mathnavi. من که صلحم دایما با این پدر، این جهان چون جنت استم در نظر. هر زمان نو صورتی و نو جمال، تازه نو دیدن فرو میرد ملال. من همی بینم جهان را پر نعیم، آبها از چشمه ها جوشان مقیم. بانگ آبش می رسد در گوش من، مست می گردد زمیر و هوش من. شاخها رقصان شده چون تایبان، برگها کفزن مثال مطربان. Absolutely astonishing. This is the taste of heaven that Maulana had in his earthly life. Since I am in complete peace with the Father, God, this world is like paradise in my sight. I see the world to be full of bounty. The waters constantly gushing from the springs. The noise of their water is coming into my ear. My mind and soul are intoxicated. I see the tree branches dancing like repenters, the leaves clapping their hands like musicians. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine somebody walking on the street and seeing branches of the tree dancing, leaves clapping their hands? That's precisely how Rumi experienced life on earth. This life that looks like hell to most of us was heaven for Rumi. Why? Because he had made peace with God. And that peace was nothing but existential surrender to God. Rumi fully understood that the truth of paradise is peace. It is peace that makes paradise, paradise. So wherever there is peace, wherever there is harmony and safety, a piece of paradise is there. Conversely, wherever there is discord, wherever there is conflict, a piece of hell is there. Exhibit 1, the Islamic Republic of Iran. The hallmark of hell, according to the Quran, is discord, conflict. Chapter 38, verse 64. إِنَّ ذَلِكَ الْحَقٌ تَخَاصُمُ أَهْلِ النَّارِ. Surely, the people of hell will feud with one another. Isn't that amazing? This is an amazing description. People of hell are at war with each other. They are full of enmity, animosity, and hatred for each other. Inhabitants of paradise have nothing but peace for each other. Inhabitants of hell have nothing but enmity, animosity, and hatred for each other. And that's the work of Satan. Chapter 17, verse 53. إِنَّ الشَّيْطَانَ يَنْزَغُ بَيْنَهُمْ. Satan sows discord and enmity among people. We're running out of time. In a nutshell, the early revelations to the Prophet Muhammad centered on personal and heavenly peace. As the Prophet's mission unfolded, peace took on a new dimension, social peace. That was the new dimension added to the mission of the Prophet Muhammad. Inshallah, next time we will trace the Prophet's movement in Arabia and see how peace played out in his vision of a just social order.